You have a broken guitar? Don't fret. Take the scenic drive to Fort Atkinson to Jeff's Guitar Clinic. We'll have you fretting your guitar in no time at all. Call 920-723-1733 or visit jeffsguitar.com. Jeff's Guitar Clinic, we love guitars.
Welcome to another podcast at SlysOffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers. Thanks to great sponsors like the Axley Law Firm, S&R Remodeling, also Madison Computer Works. Joining us now, John Nichols from the Capital Times and The Nation. John, I don't know when people are going to hear this podcast, but there's a race for mayor in Omaha, Nebraska.
Yes.
And Bernie Sanders went there and drew 6,000 people for, it's technically a nonpartisan race, but there is one Democrat and one Republican. Everyone knows which. These were the top two finishers from the primary a few weeks ago. Heath Mello is a pretty liberal Democrat for the state of Nebraska who happens to have taken a few votes against abortion. The National Abortion Rights Action League flipped out that Bernie Sanders was in Nebraska along with Tom Perez helping this this guy who had taken a couple votes on abortion. Give me your thoughts on this.
Sure. As best I can tell, now I've looked at it, you know, probably at the level that a lot of folks have, so I don't claim perfect expertise. But as best I can tell, where this Heath Mello fellow has ended up is that he says he is personally opposed to abortion, but that he would not use his power as mayor to undermine access to abortion, to assault access to abortion. So he's got a stand that is very, very similar to that of Tim Kaine, the 2016 Democratic nominee for vice president, who's also a devout Catholic and has very, very strong feelings as regards not just abortion, but also the death penalty and a host of other issues. This is a complication. I mean, obviously, you know, you're going to have people in any political party who have personal views which may be at odds with the party platform. The question really is, and it's a big question as the party tries to define itself going forward, is will they actively seek to undermine the principles of the platform if elected? My sense is that what Mello, this character in Omaha, is saying is that he wouldn't do that. And so I think the controversy is one more playing out at the national level for definition of the party and what its highest priorities are and things of that nature than it is at the local level. And this becomes, you know, it's going to be a dynamic we'll see a lot of. Here's the bottom line. Access to abortion, access to reproductive health programs and clinics is an economic issue. And so we have to be very, very careful about suggesting that, you know, somehow you can separate this out and say, oh, well, it's, you know, this is different. The fact of the matter is, for women, this is a real economic issue and a central one, and it ought to be understood as such. With that proviso, if people who are personally opposed to reproductive rights say that when they're in power, they won't seek to undermine those rights and won't seek to undermine that access, I think you're within the parameters of a functional political party in a functional position.
You know, Canada's a little different. Justin Trudeau said no pro-lifers in the parliament. Which I thought was wrong. And I'll go a lot further than you. I, you know, the first female governor of Kansas was Joan Finney. She was pro-life. And she was a little flaky, but to tell you the truth, she was actually pretty good on everything else. You know, are we going to tell people that live in the Great Plains that are Dorothy Day Democrats that they can't be Democrats? Are we going to tell people that are opposed to abortion they can't be Democrats? But what are the rules?
This is where you get into an interesting point, because you understand that this
Do you like
is,
that, Dorothy Day Democrats?
I kind of think that's a pretty good one, although I don't think Dorothy Day would have compromised with the Democratic economic agenda. you get my drift. I think
no, Dorothy was much better. Yeah, Dorothy was much better than Tim Kaine.
I love that the Pope brought her up. You know, so and speaking of the Pope, so here's the deal. You're right about Canada. There's a very different model in Great Britain, and you know, the model in Great Britain is a fascinating one. They essentially say both parties, both major parties and others, say that abortion is what they call a free vote, i.e., they're just not going to put that in the platform of either party. And it's an interest, or historically, that's what they did. And what they ended up with was, you know, overwhelming majority supporting reproductive rights, conservatives and Labour Party members. They took it out of the area of debate. And unfortunately, that's neither of the models that we're discussing here, Canada or the United Kingdom, is going to be something that's going to translate to the U.S. because we have a locked-in politics built around these issues. And frankly, you know, some real critical fears on the parts of advocates for women's rights because they've seen what's happened in the States. So, again, I think that your challenge becomes, can you work with people who you may disagree with on some issues in some fundamental ways?
I think, you know, we've learned there are some people that say no to that. And, of course, Scott Walker is helping Mayor Strothert in Omaha as we speak today. She, by the way, is 100% against abortion rights. Let me play what Crystal Ball had to say on MSNBC the other day regarding this. And Joy Reid is very anti-Bernie Sanders, so it was, you know, Joy was doing her usual bash Bernie Sanders. Here's what Crystal Ball had to say.
By a lot of women Democrats, that Bernie Sanders seems to want some Democrats to win, like this gentleman Mello, Heath Mello, who he supported in Omaha, Nebraska, and he said if this fellow wins in Nebraska, that could be a shot across the board. A state like Nebraska shows a progressive Democrat can win. He was willing to call this guy a progressive, even though this gentleman is staunchly against abortion rights. And so a lot of women said, wait a minute, how is this man telling us that we must get behind 100% of his platform, including this guy who doesn't even stand for women's rights? What do you make of it?
Well, I don't think it's any secret that Bernie Sanders puts economics front and center, and that is his primary and foremost concern. And it's also why he found such success in unlikely places, why he was so popular, for example, when he came to Kentucky and I was there this week, is because he put that first front and center. Keep in mind, back when we had control of the House of Representatives, we had about 36 pro-life Democrats, and we would not have things like health care reform if we didn't have those folks in place. So look, we are going to be a pro-choice party. Bernie Sanders is pro-choice, but I think he's looking at 50 states and saying if we're really going to have a 50-state strategy, you have to allow people to be in a different place culturally on some of these issues as long as you're putting economics front and center. And frankly, what we've done recently in the party is we've enforced purity on the cultural issues and allowed anything goes on economics, right? You can be in the pocket of Wall Street, you can be in the pocket of Silicon Valley, that's all fine and good. And I think Bernie Sanders is trying to reverse that. And it happens to be a course that I agree with if we want to take back power in some of these states and if we want to get back in control in the House of Representatives.
I think she nailed it there. I have to tell you, I deeply resent Planned Parenthood and NARAL and what they've done to the Democratic Party. I completely agree with their agenda of supporting reproductive rights for women. But, you know, for a long time, they've ran supreme in the Democratic Party and told those of us that believe in, you know, workers' rights and against these terrible free trade deals that we shouldn't bargain away people's livelihood. Well, they've asked us to compromise with John Kerry and the Clintons and this and that. And now they're getting a little taste of their own medicine, John, and I'm going to be less polite than you are. And I, frankly, I've really had it with their crap.
Well, I'm going to defend them. And I'm going to tell you that the people who are in charge of Planned Parenthood and NARAL now are folks who have deeper roots in economic justice and trade union struggles than perhaps some of the folks in the past. And so I don't think that this fight, if you will, by the way, about which I have heard not a single person, including in some very political settings over the last few days bring up. I think it is a D.C. fight, and I don't think that
it's not going to hurt Heath Mello in Omaha.
I also, maybe not. But I also think, look, Planned Parenthood and NARAL have agendas which they have a right to advance, and they have allied with some workers' rights struggles, especially in recent years. And so I do think,
Really? I'm going to push back a little bit. I think the fight, I watch it on Facebook. I think this isn't really a fight about abortion rights. I think this is a fight. This is still a proxy of the fight between Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders. And I think some of the organizations that are pushing at Bernie for helping Heath Mello are mad that he didn't help Jonathan Ossoff.
Well, there's some folks that are just mad at Bernie for being Bernie, right? There's no doubt of that. And there's folks who don't like the fact that Bernie Sanders is, in the polls, the most popular politician in America, right? That's inconvenient for centrists in the Democratic Party. And I got to tell you, that goes way beyond reproductive rights issues. There's a lot of centrists who really
They feel threatened by it.
They feel terribly threatened by it. And you know what? Sanders is going to keep doing what Sanders does. What's important here, and what I really think, and I think you're getting at something that's an interesting subtlety, what's really the center of this discussion is Tom Perez, right? Because Tom Perez is clearly saying, we need Bernie Sanders. We can't be, a party that doesn't have this guy and his supporters, allied with us and excited about us. And so I do think that there is a wrestling match now between the folks who have had a lot of power in the Democratic Party and, for lack of a better term, the Democratic Party's future.
Well,
is
that Tom Perez has been backtracking all week and essentially essentially leaving the impression that there's a purity test on abortion rights to be a Democrat.
Well, but he's still been out there and they haven't liked that fact. And I hear what you're saying.
What, is he not going to help Bob Casey get reelected in Pennsylvania or Joe Manchin in West Virginia or Joe Donnelly in Indiana?
Of course he will. Yeah. I mean, this is the thing about it. And you know what the weird thing is? The Republicans went to the mat to try and reelect Lincoln Chafee when he was their senator back, some years ago, even though he was an incredibly pro-choice senator. Political parties know they've got to build their majorities where they can get them. And that's why I would argue that this discussion, I think you're actually onto something when you say a lot of it has to do with Sanders and Sanders' role in the party, his power in the party. But here's the one thing I would counsel. Both the Democratic and the Republican parties right now are in crisis. And the Republican Party has full power, and yet they can't govern because of their factionalization. The Democratic Party has been stunningly unsuccessful in the last couple election cycles. They've not put it together. And so they're each kind of wrestling with who they're going to be. You're going to see these internal struggles. What I can tell you is this. The party that figures out how to get as many people as possible on the same page and to kind of barrel through that 2018 cycle is the party that's, it will dominate because of unity, not because of division. And so when Democrats fight about these issues, and they can, and I don't mind a good big debate, but they should understand that if Republicans unify through all their factionalization and Democrats don't, Republicans will get an advantage there. Also, the one final thing I'll throw into the mix here, and this is just an important thing to keep in mind as you see these internal struggles, again, not something that could be controlled, but something that should be understood and perhaps, folks can respond to it as they choose. But here's the deal. We just had an election in France. The two major political groupings in France finished third and fifth, right? As folks who were not part of, one guy who'd never even been elected to public office, another woman, who's obviously been on the fringe for a very long time, came out on top. And
yeah, we'll get into that. I want to talk about the French election in a minute.
Yeah, but just one final concept there. That what happened is, in that country, long-term political groupings couldn't hold themselves together. And I know that people say, oh, well, America can never have things like that happen. I disagree. I think we're in a situation where there's a lot of potential for a lot of division in this country, and I think Trump might well be the start of things, not the end of things in that regard. So the political parties ought to think about what priority they put on unity as regards purity and how they pull these groupings together, because these could become really critical issues in the next few years. Not the issues of, you know, a particular stand on a particular position, but this question of can you get everybody basically on the same page for an election cycle?
Jack Nichols from the Capital Times and The Nation with us at SlysOffice.com.
When you're looking for a new computer or need help with one you already own, call 231-8000 and Madison Computer Works will get things up and running for you. Madison Computer Works, computers that work for you.
We're back with John Nichols, SlysOffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers and great local sponsors like St. Vincent de Paul. I want to talk a little bit about what happened in France yesterday, your thoughts on the primary there and what happened. Mm-hmm. And where you see this headed.
Okay, well, first off, I got to say up front, I was for Jean-Luc Mélenchon, right? He was the guy who came in essentially tied for third, and he was the candidate who left. I didn't even necessarily agree with him on everything, but I incredibly appreciated his insurgent campaign. But he didn't make it. And the two candidates who did make it are Marine Le Pen of the what's traditionally been understood as the National Front Party, and another candidate, Emmanuel Macron, who has never held public office but was an advisor in the currently unbelievably unpopular socialist government.
François Hollande?
Yeah, so this is a pretty damn fascinating thing, right, that the current government's unbelievably unpopular, and yet a guy who was its economic advisor is now the front-running candidate, the likely candidate to win. And the second candidate to come through, Le Pen, is somebody who polls show couldn't beat anybody for president. So they've ended up with a very weird play out here. And they have a very different system than we do, and that system is a runoff system. And what that means is two candidates can come out with under a quarter of the vote, and that's what happened here. You get, you know, two candidates under 25% of the vote, narrowly beating out additional candidates. And then all the other candidates are off the ballot, and it's just those two, and you're sort of stuck with that. So what you have in France now is a choice between right-wing populism that mirrors some, though certainly not all, of Donald Trump. In some cases, is worse than Trump. In some cases, very similar to Trump. But let's just say that Steve Bannon's favored candidate, by almost any measure, would have to be Marine Le Pen, against a candidate who, frankly, is a neoliberal. You know, who is proposing so-called reforms that are going to owe a lot to Tony Blair and to Clinton, you know, Bill Clinton type approaches. So I got to tell you, it's not a very thrilling choice, but it's an easy choice because, you know, myself, I don't vote for fascists or for people who are sometimes accused of being fascists. So Le Pen's off my list.
I heard Rush Limbaugh talking about this today. And,
really?
Yeah. Every other sentence he was tying Democrats and liberals to globalism, and it's very interesting because it's very interesting because the one issue that tied Rush Limbaugh and Bill Clinton together back in the early 90s was their unwavering support of free trade.
Yep.
And I'd like to know where the press is holding people like Robin Voss and Scott Walker and Ron Johnson, all these people that have sort of gone silent on their support of corporate handshakes and globalism and free trade,
yeah,
as Donald Trump marches down the street in a very bellicose fashion, bashing these things. What exactly is going on? And are liberals going to get left holding the bag of something of globalism and capitalism that is very unpopular?
Well, that's a very good question you asked. And of course, that's the interesting dynamic of what happened in France. Now, in the French election, because Americans, like American reporters who cover French politics, generally are thrilled to get a chance to go to Paris in the spring. Okay? That's their deep understanding of the dynamic. and they cover French politics essentially through the narrowest lens, trying to understand it in ways that don't make any sense. Here's the bottom line.
They cover it about as well as they cover free trade.
Or American politics.
Or American
yeah. And so here's the thing to understand. Marine Le Pen and Front National, the father's party, a very right-wing party.
Holocaust deniers.
Well, the dad for sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Daughter's got in a little trouble on some of this. It's really people in that party. And I guess the granddaughter's really bad. So just so you know, it's a family-run party.
Oh, very nice.
Much like the Republican Party will be under Trump. And so here's the important thing to understand. Everybody's all excited about Marine Le Pen getting through this into the runoff. And then she did make it through, as her dad did back in 2002. So it's not the first time they've come through. The polls show that she's going to lose. And I don't have any doubt of that. I don't think this is a Brexit situation or a Trump situation. But here's the interesting thing. Everybody talks about how Marine Le Pen kind of cleaned up her party. She did all this stuff over all these years to make her party more appealing, right, to mainstream it. And also, we're in the midst of this reaction against globalization. We're in the midst of all these changes politically. But you know how much her percentage went up from the last time she ran?
How much?
3%. Now, on the other side, Jean-Luc Mélenchon, the guy who hardly anybody even understands how to talk about, but the guy who ran for economic justice, against austerity, for a restructuring of these global deals, for peace, and for reform of French government so that people have more say in how things operate. He went up from his last run more than 8 points. So the one candidate, the candidate who you can measure, right, who had a dramatic increase in his position, who swept the youngest voters, you know, easily won among the youngest voters, and brought a lot of the working class back to the left, away from going to Le Pen, had the biggest growth in his support. The only reason I bring that up is to say that a smart analysis of what happened in France would tell you that we are moving into a period where these economic populist issues, where this concern about globalization, about digitalization, about automation, become real political factors. There's no question of that. But there is strong evidence that the French didn't get very excited about going to the right, and that the big growth, a lot of the growth, was on the left. And this is something that Americans ought to take away from it. There is a way to take these issues away from the right, to align them with economic and social justice, women's rights, immigrant rights, humane treatment of people across the board, and prevail. But you can't do it by going down the middle. Now, Macron, who did go down the middle, and I'll tell you that, and got a quarter of the vote, Macron is almost certainly going to be the next leader of France. And he is going to govern as a centrist. I expect that, and do a lot of centrist reforms. And you know what I think is probably going to happen? In about 2 years, he's going to end up very unpopular.
Let me play a clip of Matthew Dowd. Of course, an ABC poll came out yesterday that showed that Donald Trump is really, really unpopular, but it's not exactly helping Hillary Clinton's numbers that if there were an election held again today, that Hillary Clinton would probably lose not only the popular vote, but the electoral vote. I don't know whether that's true, but
I don't know that.
Here is Matthew Dowd.
Trump fact, but one of the things we also saw in this poll, Matthew, and you hinted at that before, most Americans now, 67%, think that Democrats are more out of touch than Republicans.
Well, this is the problematic. This is how Donald Trump benefits, right? And this is why Democrats are still, it's a very problematic situation for the Democrats. And I think everything, you know, God love her, but every time Hillary Clinton shows up at a speech and does that, it doesn't help the Democrats. They have to, in my view, they have to figure out who is their next generation, who is their next round of leaders that can push up against Donald Trump. And I'll take one exception with some, or a couple of exceptions with speakers. I grew up in Michigan. I grew up in Detroit. I have 10 brothers and sisters. I live in Texas. I see the panorama of the country. I was one of the first people that said Donald Trump was going to win the Republican nomination and beat the others because I saw the level of support out there. Keep in mind that Donald Trump, ever since he was inaugurated as president, a majority of the country has disapproved of Donald Trump.
And here is what Newt Gingrich had to say.
All collectively lived through Trump knocking off all the Republicans, Trump knocking off Hillary, being wrong about all of it at every stage. And then you turn around and you apply the same old conventional wisdom. Donald Trump is the most divisive president since Abraham Lincoln. He represents an alternative world. It's why you have riots at places like Berkeley. You have two parallel universes here. There's actually a very funny Megyn Kelly interview I did 2 weeks before the election. She's giving me all this polling data. And I said, look, there are two universes. Now, if your universe is right, Hillary Clinton's president. If our universe is right, Donald Trump is president.
I completely take that point. That's how he's being seen out in the country, in parts of the country right now. But how does it affect the governing? Can you govern effectively
sure.
with 40%
support? Sure. First of all, as you know, because you've done it, presidents are really powerful. Presidents who are willful and strong-willed and focused have enormous capability to move the system. But second, I have a very simple test. Reagan, in his farewell address, says, I am so proud that together we created 19 million jobs. If Trump has the economy roaring in 2020, he'll get reelected. I don't care what the current numbers are.
No,
if Trump doesn't have the economy rolling in 2020, he has a problem.
Your thoughts on all those comments?
There's a lot of comments there.
Okay? Yeah, there are.
First off, I think if the election was held again, Hillary Clinton would win. And you know, I'm not the biggest fan of Hillary Clinton. I have plenty of critiques of her. I just think that that's reality because she narrowly lost. It wasn't like she was wiped out. It's not like saying, oh, if the election was held again in 1973, McGovern would win, right? We're talking about marginal alterations, and I think she would. But even if Matthew Dowd is right, and I will put my credentials up against his. I was somebody who wrote in February of 2016, cover story for The Nation, that Trump could win the Republican nomination and the presidency. So there's a lot of us, frankly. It's one of the big fantasies is that nobody saw it coming. There's a lot of us who saw it coming. We just assumed, ultimately, that Republicans themselves would have more self-respect and not vote for the guy, and we were wrong about that. But at some fundamental level, here's where I think...
We just have a couple minutes left here.
Yeah, but it's a very simple concept. Where I think it comes down to is this. Gingrich is right up to a point about one thing, and that is that if you have a rip-roaring economy in this country, your chances of getting reelected are pretty good. And nobody should lose sight of that. Don't live in the fantasy world that tells you that's not the case. However, if I'm right about what's going on in our economy as regards the globalization revolution, digital revolution, automation revolution, I don't think we're going to get, unfortunately, I'm sad to say this, but I don't think we're going to get to a point where we have a rip-roaring economy. We may have low unemployment. We may have, you know, some of the top-line measures of a successful economy. But remember that we had that with Barack Obama in the last couple of years of his presidency. And that he didn't get rewarded much for
no,
that.
That's
neither
right.
did the Democrats.
Well, we always have a Swiss cheese economy.
That's right.
Uh-huh.
And that's why, unless you get me back to at least, at the very least, 1992 levels of industrialization and factory employment and unionization. Key thing is that final one, unionization. And that's going back, you know, about a quarter century.
Yeah, it's not going to happen.
Well, if you don't get me to that, I can't see how you have a rip-roaring economy.
All right, we got to wrap it up.
We're all Americans.
John Nichols from the Capital Times and the Nation at SlysOffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers.
SlysOffice.com.
Thanks a million.
Bye-bye.
You know, we work hard every day in mills and mines, hospitals and schools, in office buildings, pharmacies and shipyards, factories and forests, in squad cars, ambulances and taxicabs. We do all kinds of jobs in Iowa, Wisconsin, Illinois, and all across the United States and Canada. We build the things that build our country. We do things that keep our country going, support our families and our communities. We have the courage to stand up even when no one else does. We have the strength to fight for what's right, for our families and for yours. We're your friends, your neighbors, your sisters and brothers. We're more than 1 million members strong. We stand in solidarity with workers in every continent on the globe. We're the United Steelworkers Union, and every day we fight for you. Please join our fight. Visit usw.org or like us at facebook.com/steelworkers.